It's alive! Oh, in the name of God! Now I know what it feels like to be God!
Did you just die already? This is hard enough for me!
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Beware the moon, David.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Thrill me.
We belong dead.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a feast.
We got special work to do here, you and me. You've got the body. I've got the brain.
Hello, listeners. I really hope everyone's having a great Hallow season as Season of the Horrorthon gets underway. Now, as promised, we have some surprises planned for this year's festivities, and this special edition of A Conversation With features one of them, a big-time returning guest from the makeup effects industry. Previously joining us from our Scream episode 2 years ago, this returning guest needs no introduction. Folks, for this edition of A Conversation With, we're being joined by the legendary Howard Berger, a.k.a. The Bee, from K&B FX Studios. Now, I had a special introduction and all planned for Howard, but your boy made a rookie mistake and forgot to hit the record button for the first 120 seconds or so of our talk. But overall, we had a good and important conversation about everything from the ongoing strike to the makeup effects industry today, and so on and so forth. But without further ado, let's get to the episode itself, shall we? I wanted to say that we at the Film Effect obviously support you guys and stand with everything that you're picketing for and everything for reassurance and better wages. That said, is there anything that you wanted to talk about as far as the strike goes?
Yeah, so I mean, basically, you know, I mean, right now, WGA, which is the Writers Guild of America, and SAG-AFTRA, which is the Actors Guild, you know, is on strike. And I'm a member of SAG. I've been a member of SAG since the 80s when I joined, when I worked on the first Child's Play movie as a puppeteer. So I stand behind the strikes 100%. I mean, I think everybody stands behind the strikes except the AMPTP, which is the representation for all the studios. And, you know, I think something that you know, needs to be clarified is that, you know, as far as the AMTPT goes, that doesn't include like all producers, because I've heard from people like, oh, all those producers. It's not. There's producers, you know, like the producers I work with on shows that are like on the ground. Those guys are out of work too. Those guys are screwed like everybody else. And it's really these big fat cats, you know, up on the top of the pine tree there. They're the pine cones. They're the guys that have been making a lot of money off of everybody's hard work and their talent and their skills. And, you know, I mean, they'd be happy not to have any unions and pay everybody minimum wage. And that was that. And they would just collect everything they need to and, you know, and placate to the shareholders and to Wall Street. And this is really what it's about. You know, the studios used to be humane and used to have good people working there that ran the place, you know, that cared about their crews and valued their crews. But nowadays you have people who are, they don't care. It's all about the bottom line. And you know, you see this reflected in production, you know, as we work on shows, be it TV or movies, what have you, it's just a different play field. And it's very unpleasant. A friend of mine, Jerry Quist, who's a big makeup artist, he always says, I love what I do. I hate what they do. And that really is it. And it's true. We love what we do. We can hardly wait to go to work every day. But these people make it very difficult. They don't understand anything. They don't get it. It's all about money. And I know it's a business. Listen, you can't say, oh, it should be about money. It is, of course. Everything's about money.
Right.
But, you know, this is just, it's unfortunate, you know, coming off the pandemic that, you know, we had, you know, 6 months off of that. Nobody worked. And now we're, you know, it's going on. It's over 100 days for the writers, and it's over, it's closing on 60 days, I think, for SAG. So, you know, it's lean times. Nobody's working. I mean, thank goodness, you know, companies like AMC and A24, which are smaller studios, they don't have a chair at that table of the AMPTP, and they have made the deal with SAG, and they have interim agreements, so they can get back to work. So shows that we're working on, like I was working on the second season of Interview with a Vampire, that's going to get back to work. Greg Nicotero, who's my business partner at K&B Effects, working on Walking Dead, the Daryl Dixon new series in Europe. And now he can go back to work. So, you know, here are these small production companies that are able to make deals with the unions. But for some reason, Disney doesn't have the money. Disney can't afford to make the deal, you know, multi-trillion dollar company, you know. If you think about just even Disney Plus, I mean, what is it now? It's almost like $20 a month.
Yeah, it just went up. It's like $18, yeah, something like that.
And they have like 300 million viewers. So just do the math for one month. I mean, it's ridiculous. So, and you know, most of their content they own already. It's not like they have to always make new stuff. It's not like Netflix or Amazon and Apple. And you know, and you have to also think these are all tech companies. You know, Netflix used to was a DVD rental place
way back when
put Blockbuster out of business, and
yes, it did.
You know, and Apple, we know what Apple is, and Amazon, we know what Amazon is. So I think that the whole movie division stuff for Amazon and Apple are really, you know, beans to them. But you know, it's the other studios, and everybody worked so hard for decades and decades for these guys, and then this is what the end result is. You know, they just don't care, and they're gleeful that people will be suffering and losing their homes and their livelihood. So
it makes no sense also, because we're seeing now that they are delaying these releases.
Oh yeah.
Because there's no promoting going on. Right. It's like, well, this is because of you guys.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, it's like a contradiction. It's weird.
Crazy.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. This is all because of the studio. Trust me. Right. This isn't like SAG being difficult or the writer being difficult. This is something that the studio heads, the AMPTP, has, you know, brought upon themselves. And the thing I really like now is, I mean, they were thinking like, oh, this will last a week. There'll be only a big mass of people in New York and LA for a week, and then it'll die out. It's masses amounts of people. And now, you know, public opinion has turned against the studios, which is really great. The general public sees it every day in the headlines, you know, be it the LA Times or New York Times or Washington Post. And, you know, the public is aware and realizes and sees that these guys running the business, the CEOs of the studios, are crooks and terrible people. And, you know, once this is all settled, it'll be really interesting to see what the relationships will be. I mean, there'll be hatred forever. And the thing with the AMPTP is, those are guys that run the studios. The studios are all in competition. So those guys all hate each other. So once this gets settled,
of course,
there's no unity between those guys. It's not a guild. It's just a group or organization. It's not a union or anything. Those guys will go back to hating each other because they're in major competition, where writers band together. You know, the creatives always band together, SAG, you know, everybody's come out. Everybody's gone and picketed, you know, these studios. And that says a lot about the community we live in, the community of the industry. And it's nice. It's great. So, but, you know, it's going to have to settle at some point in this. I think the studios, though, I don't know if they're going to budge or not.
You're not even asking for a lot. You're asking for like what? Like 0.2% or 2%, something like that.
It's a very minimal amount. It's not like you want $5 billion a movie or whatever, you know. And listen, it's people can say, oh, well, why does George Clooney need this? Or why does Meryl Streep? They're doing this for the future generation.
Right, right.
They should.
It's not about that.
Yeah, right. They're fine. But Clooney's out there, or, you know, these big A-list actors who make, you know, millions a pop, they're there for the future generation, knowing that these guys will continue to screw everybody over and over and over again. So,
and it's also residuals. I think I read a report. Yeah. I think Aaron Paul said something about making like nothing off of all those Netflix plays of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that affects you in great too.
I'm sure. It does. I mean, like I got a check for a TV series I did years ago, and it was 4 cents. And I'm like, why even bother sending this? And those I don't even catch. I have like a stack of residual checks that are under 10 cents. You know,
right.
And it's so,
why bother?
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous. You know, they should have just sent me a stamp, and that I could use. You know,
right?
But yeah, I mean, we'll have to see what happens. Hopefully, this will resolve itself sooner than later. I don't know if there's going to be production before Christmas or if it's going to be the first of the year. It's hard to say, because even if
it's hard,
yeah, even if they settle with that WGA and SAG, there's still going to be a period to get the shows back and running. Like, I was on a show. I was 12 days away from finishing. I'd been on it for 7 months in New Mexico. There was a Netflix thing I was doing with Peter Berg. And we have to go back. But there's going to be like a five-week prep period to get the machine back running. So, you know, here's a bunch of guys that created this problem. And now they're going to have to pay for everything ramping back up. So it's like, okay, you've lost millions and millions and millions. And now you're going to lose more millions, where you could have just figured this out, settled, and...
Oh, because they wanted to be stubborn.
Yeah, well, they wanted to win. They wanted to win
right.
and prove exactly. that they can crush people. That's what it was. So it's very disappointing and discouraging.
It is.
That people in our industry would behave that way.
Especially to, like, from a fan perspective, it's like, you know, how long we had to wait for, you know, for, whether it be movies we're looking forward to seeing or television shows. I mean...
Yeah, it's going to be a while.
Frustrating.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's going to be a while.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are going to, everybody's going to watch the same stuff over and over again. I mean, I just saw like Max, you know, HBO Max, another villain. You know, they're adding a lot of AMC's content.
I saw that.
You know,
I saw
which is great for AMC, because they hopefully will get paid a lot of money to do so. And then those shows have a bigger exposure, you know, especially like Interview with a Vampire, which you could only see on like AMC Plus. And I think there's like seven people that have that. And, but this is great exposure for those shows. And it just shows that now those streaming platforms are going, oh, geez, we don't have enough. We better start trying to get some other stuff in.
Yeah.
Because there's no production going on. Even, you know, this doesn't just affect the United States. It affects all production around the world. So
exactly.
You know, all my friends in Europe and the UK, they're all out of work too. So it's hitting everybody very hard.
Yeah, I don't think people realize just the severity of the issue right now. It's pretty serious. So
yeah,
you know, serious. And they'll start seeing it once things last longer and longer, because I'm sure it's going to, unfortunately, because they're not seeming to budge anytime soon. So
yeah, no, I think it's going to last a little bit, sadly.
But anyway, let's talk about other stuff that's not strike related.
Yeah,
let's move on.
No worries.
I just thought of a whole bunch of random questions. Yeah, but this one, these pertain to your work or just makeup effects work in general.
Uh-huh.
So Tom Savini, I was watching an interview he did earlier today, and he said he believes that there's a world in which makeup effects artists and computer effects can work together hand in hand. And he used an example as from The Walking Dead,
right.
an episode back in the fifth season where people's throats were slit over a trough and they used CG to remove the rig that was just wrapped around their neck. How do you feel about that? How would you respond to that?
He's 100% correct. So listen, it's the future. It's inevitable. Yeah. All right. Yeah. It's already happening. So, I mean, you know, and I think even Greg Nicotero suggested how to do that, because, you know, when you're on set, there's time limitations. You know, you have like 10 to 12 pages to shoot every day. That's a lot of content every day. So I think what Greg did is he's like, you know what, instead of putting a blood rig on everybody, a full, you know, prosthetic neck, we do it. Hopefully it works. You know, if we have to do another take, we have to clean everybody up and reset and put on new. That's hours and hours and hours of downtime. Greg probably had 20 scenes to shoot that day. So his solution was to do what we call like a blood collar. And it's like, it just fits on, clips around the back, and they're hooked up to blood. And then you know, on cue, hit the sprayers, blood shoots out everywhere. There's no problem. And then VFX goes in and cleans it all up. I think it's great. Me personally, I'm happy having VFX do all the blood stuff.
I bet you are.
Yeah, dude, I'm not a big like blood guy. Like, I don't like to do gags. I've done my fill after Kill Bill 1 and 2. I was like, I'm done doing blood gags, you know? But it's a great tool, and we use VFX all the time. When we go to a film set or a TV set, the visual effects supervisor and producer are two of the people we become friends with quickly. They'll utilize us and we utilize them. There's things they can't do and there's things we can't do. So the magic trick is put them all together. You know, Jurassic Park is the perfect example of mixing the two disciplines. You know, Stan Winston made all these amazing animals and dinosaurs, and ILM, you know, under, you know, with Steve Spaz Williams and Mark DePay and Dennis Muren, those guys created, I mean, groundbreaking effects. Like, that changed the entire landscape of filmmaking forever. And, you know, it's a great combo. I mean, every time I'm on a show, I'm always looking to see how we can marry the two. And the thing is, and this is not negative or anything, I've really been thinking about this a lot, especially this weekend for some strange reason, but you know, the future is digital. And eventually what we do will be phased out to some degree. You know, we had our heyday, and that's great. And I had a great career. We've all had great careers. We've got to work on super cool movies, you know.
Yeah.
I love everything I've ever done, you know, and I'm so honored and privileged to work on film. But, you know, it's a different generation. And the new generation, you know, isn't so history-based, isn't so, like, film-based. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people I've spoken to who are students. They don't know who Rick Baker is. They don't know who Dick Smith is, which is shocking to me. You know, and probably in about 5 years, they won't know who I am. And probably in 7 years, they won't know who Greg is. But, but you know, it's just the way things evolve. We're going to start to see AI. That's inevitable. You know, we can fight it and all this, but it's, you know, we obviously didn't learn anything from Terminator. So, you know, I guess it's going to happen. And, you know, what are we going to do? But these are all okay. It's okay. It's everything's changing. Listen,
change is good.
Yeah. When sound became was invented for and utilized for film, everybody was in a panic. This is never going to work. We can't do this. Da, da, da. Well, look what happened there. And it's one thing after another, right. It's just always going to be evolving. That's what it is. It's art. And it's okay that it's not, that makeup effects may not be around. That's okay. It's a new generation. There'll be new things, you know. Phil Tippett thought, you know, there'll always be stop motion animation in movies. That'll be the go-to. After Jurassic Park, that wasn't the case. Everything was digital, right. You know, and stop motion animation became a specialized, specific effect for that movie, be it Nightmare Before Christmas or be it, you know, Corpse Bride and so forth. But it wasn't the go-to. Like, how are we going to do this? Oh, yeah, stop motion animation. Digital, of course. But we're going to just start to see the entire industry, the film industry, evolve. And it's just going to keep growing and growing into something that maybe I don't recognize and understand, but that's okay. You know, I'm rounding 60 years old. You know, I started when I was 18. It's been a long time. And I've seen things change like wildfire. But, you know, I'm okay with it. You know, and the next generations that come in, they won't know what we did. You know, that's not going to be part of their world. They're going to be involved in the digital world, in the IA world, you know, everything. And that's what's important. They should be learning. You know, I mean, I love what I do. I cherish it. I think it's magic. And it's what we'll be missing at that point is the teamwork, the camaraderie, the actual hands-on, the innovation that you have to do with your brain and your hands to make everything work and bring it to life. The magic trick. You know, but they won't know that because their minds will already be in the digital world. So to them, that's normal and that's what they're going to know. If there's movies that are made with AI, I won't go see them no matter how old I am. I'm not interested, but that's going to be okay for them, you know, because that's what they grew up on. It's just part of the evolution. So it's inevitable, but it's also okay. There's always going to be a renaissance
with art.
So, you know, I think we're in a period of a renaissance right now between the strikes and between IA and between the world of digital and the traditional way of doing things that we do at K&B. So, you know, we'll just have to see what happens. People are doing a lot of different things. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
And speaking of effects artists, I watched a documentary yesterday called Nightmare Factory.
Oh, God.
I'm sure you know all about Nightmare Factory.
Yeah.
About K&B.
Yes.
And I recommend anybody listening check it out if you haven't already. about 10 years old. It was a really fun watch. If you want to know anything about K&B effects, check out that documentary. They had Carpenter on there, and he referred to makeup effects artists as divas.
Yeah, that's
John. How do you feel about it? I know John's John. I've seen countless interviews of him, heard many commentaries on so many, you know, projects. John's just got this way about him, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
You know, calling you guys a bunch of divas.
Yeah, Greg and I love John Carpenter. And, you know, every time I've had the opportunity to work with him, I always try to hit him up for stories. You know, like, tell me about the thing. You know, what was that like? Right. Oh, Rob Bottin. And he's like, Howard, it was just crappy rubber monsters, okay? Just and I'm like, John, give me more, please, please. And I think he does it intentionally to torture me, so. But you know, hey, I mean,
you worked with him on In the Mouth of Madness, right?
I did two episodes. I want to say, yeah, two episodes of Masters of Horror, which was a TV show Mick Garris created.
Mick Garris,
the most fun ever. So John directed those two episodes, or two of those episodes, which I did. And then Greg primarily has worked with John. We did Ghosts of Mars and In the Mouth of Madness, and
did you do vampires with them?
We did vampires. Vampires was the first time we worked with Body Bags, which was a Showtime
movie. Yeah. I actually own that. That's underrated an anthology film.
Yeah, that's the first time we worked with John, and then after that, John brought us in for everything he did, which was amazingly fantastic because we were all massive John Carpenter fans and still are.
Yeah,
of course. But yeah, I mean, I'm sure John thinks that we could be divas at time, you know, but that's okay.
I just thought that was funny.
If he says it, I'll whatever John wants.
And because of that documentary, I now know what Witchy Poochin is.
Oh yeah, the Witchy Poochin. Absolutely.
Witchy Poochin. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the same thing. Yep.
Yeah, it is. So throughout your career, you've been involved with bringing in iconic characters like Leatherface, Chucky, Freddy Krueger, Pumpkinhead, Michael Myers, Jason Voorhees. The lists go on and on. The names. You and Greg have played a hand in bringing them all to life, and I know you're personally more of a fantasy guy yourself, but do you have a favorite character from that bunch?
That's a good question. So yeah, I mean, we have had our hands in everything. I mean, Child's Play, I worked for Kevin Yeager.
Kevin Yeager, right.
Yeah, Yeag was my boss, and I worked up just on Child's Play 1, and I was on the Chucky crew. So, you know, K&B never got to work with Chucky, but I did, and it was super awesome. But yeah, you're right. We did Leatherface. We've done the Leatherface movies. We've done Halloween. But for me, you know, I think as far as that world goes, as far as like the iconic slashers go, I always loved Leatherface. And the reason why is because he's not supernatural. There's a real psychosis going on there, obviously. He's a murderer. He's a serial killer. But I don't know. There's something so scary about Leatherface. And I love the Tobe Hooper, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And that's really the one and only. And that movie is fantastic and brilliant. It really shows how brilliant Tobe Hooper was. And and I love all Tobe's movies. And he was a wonderful, wonderful guy, really down to earth. But I love Leatherface. I would say that the iconic horror character I had the most fun working with was Robert Englund as Freddy. So again, I worked for Kevin Yeager, and it was on Nightmare 4, and he gave me the task of applying Freddy's makeup for that movie. And that was so much fun doing Robert Englund's makeup. And I remember the first time I did it, Kevin was there watching because he wanted to make sure I was doing it right. And Robert talks a lot. And so I was respectful. Yeah. And every time Robert spoke, I would stop. And then he'd stop, and then I'd go in. I was being respectful. It took about 4.5 hours. So afterwards, Kevin's like, dude, just jump in there, grab him. He'll just talk and talk. Just keep doing your work. By the end of the show, I had it down to like 45 minutes. I would knock it out of the park. And there were times I did it, and Robert's like, oh, you didn't put the chin on. I'm like, look in the mirror. You're done. Well, when did you do that? I said, when you're telling the story about this and this and this, you know? Because Robert's full of stories. He's so funny.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's wonderful. Another fantastic guy. And but yeah, no, it's, you know, the only horror character we never worked on with was we didn't do any of the Hellraiser movies. We never worked with Doug Bradley or any of those guys as Pinhead. So yeah, we never
because that was Barker overseas working on that, right?
What's that?
Didn't they film that like over in London, Barker and his gang?
The first and second one, and then I think they shot the other ones here in the States. Like I think the third one was
North Carolina.
But I mean, he had his guys. He had Bob Keane and Gary Tunnicliffe and Mark Coulier, who's now a two-time
That's the name I was thinking of, Gary.
Yeah. So, but yeah, Gary Tunnicliffe and all those guys, you know, super, super talented guys working for Bob Keane, doing all those makeups. So, but yeah, you know, there was a period that we did get talked to. Somebody called us and said, oh, you know, probably the Miramax, and they were going to do another Hellraiser, and they brought it to our attention, but we ended up not doing it, or the film didn't happen.
Right.
That was about as close as we got. But outside of that, I mean, you know, we've, you know, done it all. So, and it's cool, man. It's and I like
it. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. And it was fun. I mean, that was the 80s. You know, it was fun doing all those movies in the 80s. And, you know, we worked really, really hard. And you know, between Miramax and New Line Cinema and, you know, and Scream, we were on, you know, did Scream.
Yeah. Talked about that last time you were on.
Yeah, we did 1, 2, and 3. So, yeah, working with Wes. I mean, the cool thing is we got to work with all our idols, you know?
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
Getting to work with John Carpenter and Wes Craven and Sam Raimi.
It's incredible.
Don Coscarelli and... I mean, right. You know,
Don, yeah.
Yeah, and Toby Hooper and all these guys, Stuart Gordon. I mean, the list goes on, Larry Cullen. It goes on and on and on. And I'll tell you, that's the best part of doing what I do is I get to work with people that I grew up idolizing, like John Landis. I love John Landis.
Right.
You know, we've worked together and, you know, I think we're friends to some degree. To me, that's really super cool because I'm a fanboy. I'm a big fan. Believe me, don't think because I've done all this stuff and this, that, and the other thing, I'm jaded by it. I am still like my heart palpitates. I'm like, oh, wow, you know, this is so cool. Or I look at that guy. Or there's so-and-so. Or there, be it actors, be it, you know. I mean, I live in Sherman Oaks in California. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I went to this ice cream place we like to go to in Studio City. And I was opened the door for her. She walked in and I looked up and there was Clancy Brown. And I'd worked with Clancy like in the 80s, but I was like, Clancy Brown. He's like, hey, I'm like, oh, it's Howard Berger. He's like, oh, yeah, we worked together. Anyhow, my wife loves him.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I love Clancy.
From Carnival, you know, brother Justin. And she just was frozen because she's like, I love Clancy Brown. And there was Clancy walking in with his kid.
Right, of course.
And I'm like, I was really excited. I'm like, that's Clancy Brown. He's
right.
Highlander and all this stuff, you know, all my favorite stuff. So, but, yeah, no, it's, you know, Greg is that way too. Greg is a massive fan, and all of us are. We're all fanboys. You know, again, we're all in our 60s, and we all get together, and our wives look at us, and they're like, what are you guys, 12 years old? Because we're excited, and, you know, you have Star Wars masks. Like,
right, I see that. It's awesome.
Lightsabers over there. You know, I got everything. I got I just bought a bunch of,
stay young.
Star Wars posters that I had in my bedroom when I was a kid, and I'm like, I need some Star Wars posters. So, but yeah, I mean, that's what makes it super cool, man. You're still a fan of all of it.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Got a couple more questions. I just got an indication that we got 10 minutes left.
Yeah,
so
away.
One of the films that we're discussing for our Horrorthon event in October is 86 is Night of the Creeps from Fred Dekker. I know you worked on that.
Yeah, I did.
Do you have any memories or stories from that production?
Yeah, sure.
Like any good Tom Atkins or David Paymer stories you want to share?
I was in them. I mean, we were all in.
I know you're in it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was
the bus, right?
What's that?
You're on the bus, aren't you?
I'm one of the frat boys. I wasn't on the bus. Bob Kirsten was on the bus. But I'm the one that comes through the window at the end and then they shoot him in the head and my bugs come out of my head. It was an interesting film. I worked for Dave Miller, who did all the makeup effects, and Dave was the originator of the Freddy Krueger makeup. He did Nightmare 1 and then did, I think, 5 and 6 or what have you.
Okay.
And Dave hired me, and it was during the summer of 1985. It was July 1985. We started making stuff. And it was a pretty small crew, but a very strong crew. And so we just started building stuff. I did a little bit of set work. I was mostly in the shop. But everybody was super cool. I remember reading the script. I thought it was really funny. I always liked Fred Dekker. Fred's a super nice guy. Prior to that, I worked at Stan Winston's on Monster Squad. So I knew Fred from there. Yeah, Fred was super cool. And he is real specific to the way he writes and directs and so forth. And it's really fun. And I just remember kind of all the elbow jabs, like, you know, Lieutenant Raimi and, you know, Dr. Carpenter, you know, and we all got that, of course, you know,
right.
And it's just kind of a good, like inside joke for all of us. But everybody was super cool. I mean, it was a hard film. It was a lot of nights. And even then when I was a kid, I hated nights. And now I really, really hate shooting nights, but, yeah, it was fun. I mean, it played out just the way it was written, you know, and all that zombie stuff we did at the end, it was crazy. I mean, we kept going back and shooting insert stuff and more zombie stuff. And that's where I played. I was like one of the last reshoots. I wasn't part of principal photography, and Dave, right. I sculpted my makeup and my head and all that stuff. And then Dave Miller applied the makeup. And at that time, contact lenses were hard. They were glass,
yes,
not,
right.
not soft. So Dave put my lenses in. They stayed all day. And at the end of the day, we tried to get them out. They wouldn't want to. They were suctioned under my eye. And anyhow, we finally got them off. And then I have like these little scars. You can't see them unless they're like, but there's like weird little scars on my eyes from those damn contact lenses. But it was an interesting show. It was fun. We didn't know how it was going to be. You know, you just hope it's going to be good.
I love that movie.
Yeah, I know people. You love it, and people love that film. You know, I mean,
yeah.
It's not. I don't watch a lot of stuff that I worked on. You know,
I got you. I can respect that.
Yeah, there's only a handful. Like I really love Dusk Till Dawn. I love Army of Darkness. I love Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch in the Wardrobe. You know, I mean, it's really a handful of movies.
Over 200.
Yeah, Kill Bill. I just watched Kill Bill 1 and 2 again, and that's, you know, super super fantastic. Yeah. And Quentin is a super genius. So, but yeah, no, it's Night of the Creeps was fun, but it was super hard. Just
all right.
Wait, and Tom Atkins was great. And, you know, the season 4 of Creepshow TV show that Greg Nicotero does, Tom's in one of the episodes.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. So it's going to be really
cool. I like that show they got going on there.
Yeah, it's cool. That's all Greg Nicotero, man. That's all Greg. You know, that's Greg.
That's awesome.
Greg's baby, and he works really hard. And everybody at K&B produces, I think, some of the best stuff we've done. It's too bad we can't get it all featured all the time because it's the nature of the beast. You know, it's a 25-minute episode or whatever. But, you know, Greg really lets the artists go hog wild. So it's really nice. So, but yeah, I'm super proud of Greg. He's, you know, he's the only guy that's ever transitioned out of our industry to become a very successful director and producer and writer. So it's, you know, there are people that have tried, but not to the extent of Greg. So it's a pretty, pretty huge thing in my opinion.
All right. Got 5 minutes left. Time for one more question.
All right. One more question.
What three films that you personally worked on are your favorite, and why?
Okay.
Let me rephrase that.
All right.
What three films are you most proud of?
Okay. The films I'm most proud of, I'm going to have to say is Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, because it was something I'd never done before. It was an unbelievable adventure. I was on that film for almost 2 years, and it was just a wonderful experience with wonderful people shooting in New Zealand. I love Army of Darkness. Because again, it was an all immersive production. Sam like pulled so much out of Bob, Greg, and myself. We worked so hard. You know, talk about nights. We did like 7 months of nights in the desert in Acton. But you know, back then you don't know any better. You know, we put ourselves in super dangerous situations, but it was great.
Right.
And then I love Kill Bill. We shot Kill Bill as one movie. So, and you know, it wasn't like, oh, we shot one and then
it was
went
a
back.
Studio thing. Of
yeah.
Course.
Yeah. It was just a 4.5-hour movie, and Quentin made the decision to cut it into two, which I think was great. And I really, really love the Kill Bill movies. I think they're pretty iconic. So, you know, those are my three. And Quentin drags you through the mud every single day.
You work
so hard, but man, you go home exhausted, beat, covered in fake blood, but you feel so good. Cause you're like, I just did a great job.
You've done all of his films so far, right?
Yeah, the only film that K&B has not worked on is Jackie Brown, and that's only because there was nothing in it for us.
Right, I was going to say, there's nothing in that film.
But Quentin has always...
Are you doing The Critic?
I don't know. We haven't heard, so we'll see. Right. You know, I mean, to me, I think Quentin's the greatest film director there is.
I'm with you.
Days. And, you know, and a great novelist. If you haven't read his books are fantastic. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I had the novelization of Once Upon a Time.
Fantastic.
Yes.
And then Cinema Speculation is outstanding. So, The guy knows everything there is to know, and it's all relatable to me because we both kind of grew up here in Los Angeles and all that. So at the same time, and I'm like, oh yeah, I did that. Oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. I know where that movie theater is. And, you know, it's those are three. I mean, it's hard to narrow it down, but those are three films I'm super super proud of. There's more,
that makes sense. You know,
but those are, I'm really proud of those movies.
Quick question, actually, I got one more. Has the idea of a potential autobiography come up? I'm surprised you haven't written, you know, a writer.
No, just, I am. Yeah. I mean, I have a book. I wrote a book. It's called Masters of Makeup Effects, which is out. It's in its second.
I'm aware of the book. I thought that was more of like a photo book.
No. It's not an autobiography. It's not about me. It's about everybody in my industry. Like, I don't give a shit about me. I want to hear what all my friends have to say. So it's an outstanding book. So it's, you know, it's sold out right out of the gate. It's first printing. It's in a second printing. It's been, there's a Japanese version, a Chinese version, an Italian version, a French version. And it's a great, great book. I highly recommend it to everybody. You can get it on Amazon.
Where I saw it.
But no, I don't have interest in writing about myself. I think it's self-serving and I'm kind of not that sort of guy. I'm more interested in everybody else and what they're doing, you know, which is what spawned Masters of Makeup Effects, which I also co-wrote with Marshall Julius, who's a writer in the UK. And, you know, and we're writing another book right now that I think is going to be really cool about monsters and monster movies and how monster movies influence people in Hollywood. And, you know, we've got about 70 people on the slate we're interviewing for the book from, you know, some pretty big names. So it's exciting because everybody loves monsters. Everybody's a monster kid at heart. So it's cool.
Howard, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me back on.
We'll make sure it's a third time. We'll do it again.
All right. You let me know, pal.
All right. We'll talk again soon. All right.
All right. Take care. Right. Thanks, everybody.
Did you just die already? This is hard enough for me.
We all go a little mad sometimes.
Beware the moon, baby.
Good news and bad news, girls. Good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Well, a boy's best friend is his mother.
Thrill me.
We belong dead.
This is Halloween. Everybody make a scene.
We got special work to do here, you and me. You've got the body. I've got the brain.
All right, gang, we're going to see you all again next time when those theater lights go dim and the opening credits begin to roll.